believing in yourself and your story. Welcome to episode 37 of Working Title Podcast. I'm your host, indie author J.P. Kane. October is Vampire Author Month, according to me, so I'll be speaking with Robert Tomoguchi, author of Scribbled Victims, which he first wrote as a screenplay and is now a vampire series. We take a peek at scriptwriting and pitching to producers, his tips for dialogue and plotting, experimenting with Instagram to reach readers, redesigning his book cover, and much more. Enjoy! Welcome, Robert, to my podcast, Working Title.
Hi, Josh. Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate it. And I enjoyed your book, Scribbled Victims, and I'd like to start there. It's a vampire book. Tell us about it.
Well, thank you first for reading it. I really appreciate that. The Scribbled Victims is a book about the relationship between a young female vampire. Well, by young, she's over 200 years old, but she was abandoned by her sire and was basically left heartbroken. And she also developed a conscience where she began to feel guilty for feeding on human victims. This all changes when she meets a 12-year-old girl in the hospital who has an ability to see evil in others through scribbled portraits she makes of them. And because of this, the two begin to bond where Orly, the 12-year-old, begins to give Yelena, the vampire, these scribbles in order to provide her victims she can feed on without guilt. And as it progresses, their relationship blooms and they form basically a mother-daughter relationship. And everything seems great except for the fact that Orly is rapidly dying of leukemia. And Yelena is basically plagued with a choice on whether or not to allow Orly to die or to make her immortal. It would seem like an easy decision to make her immortal, but Yelena knows that if she does that, she'll be dooming Orly to a life in the body of a child. And basically is concerned that she will never find love because of that. So that's the essence of the story.
Well put. I found their relationship great. It was very compelling. It got me through the whole story just wonderfully. How long have you been writing? How long have you considered yourself a writer? Have you written other things other than this book?
Yes. I started writing poetry when I was 13 years old. And it was, typical teen angst poetry that I'm sure would be embarrassing for me to read today. I think I still have some of it stored away in a trunk somewhere. but when I was 16, I was always a reader. But when I was 16, I by chance happened to read the novella The Dead by James Joyce and thought it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And that was what made me decide I wanted to be a writer. And so at 16, I started doing my first writing workshop at a university, and I started writing fiction then. But since then, then I was writing short fiction, and since then I also wrote some stage plays. I had a couple of productions, and then I moved on to writing some screenplays. And then I returned back to fiction, writing a few novellas, and then The Scribbled Victims, which came out in 2017, was my first full-length novel.
Okay, I didn't realize you had written plays and screenplays. That's cool. How's writing those things, a play versus a novella or a novel? How are they different? Obviously, there are differences as far as the way it's structured and things, but I mean, as far as creatively, are there limitations that are different in one versus the other?
I find my process of developing story and daydreaming basically the same. for, you know, either medium. I think the biggest difference, though, is the constraints you have with writing for stage or film. You know, you have time constraints, you know, where your film can only be so long or your play can only be so long. So there's page limits. And I think it more closely follows a prescribed act structure. Mm-hmm. You're also limited to expressing almost everything through dialogue alone, including all your character development. You know, you don't have the luxury that you do in a novel of, you know, either having exposition from an omniscient point of view or just, you know, internal monologues of, you know, the main character to express, you know, who that character is.
Oh, that's well put. How do you, I guess you feel very, dialogue for you is a strong suit, I guess, writing several plays and screenplays. Or is that something you still think that's a challenge for you?
I don't know if I'm good at writing dialogue. I know that I enjoy writing dialogue. I think it's probably one of the more fun aspects of writing is getting to imitate other people and say what they would say. I don't know if it comes across as good. I'm hoping that my voices, my dialogue, I'm hoping that the voices are, you know, unique enough that you can distinguish who's saying what. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that the trickiest. Like, I would like to write at the level where I don't have to have the tags on the dialogue that just by the words themselves, the reader knows who's speaking. But I don't think I'm there yet.
One thing I used to do in writing plays and screenplays is when I would have my drafts, you know, far along, I would actually isolate the dialogue of just a single character and read that through to see if it sounds consistent and different. So I'm only reading their dialogue. And then I would do the same for the other characters.
Yeah, with the screenplays, do you read aloud?
No, I don't read. Well, I guess I kind of mumble to myself. I don't know if that's aloud or not.
Do you perform them, the roles to yourself as you're writing them?
I actually perform a lot of dialogue while I'm driving.
Oh, really?
You know, okay. I'm in Southern California, so I'm in traffic a lot. So people, you know, if they look at me, they might see me talking to myself in my car a lot, but it's really I'm acting out characters often in voice, and so I will only do this when I'm in the car alone.
Okay. So you enjoy writing dialogue. What are things you find challenging in your writing?
Well, I think the biggest challenge for me with writing would be making the time or having the time and energy to actually do the writing, you know, because I'm an indie author and I work a full-time job that, you know, takes up 40 plus hours a week. And often at the end of the day, I'm tired. And so finding the time to write every day, which I think is important, is often a struggle. I make a daily goal to write just 30 minutes a day.
Okay.
And I make that goal because it's an easy goal for me to stomach. When I see write for 30 minutes, it's like it's not that intimidating. I can find the time to do that. And I know that when I sit down and make time for those 30 minutes, it usually does not end at 30 minutes. It'll go on much longer than that. So I'm actually writing more than that a day, but it's about setting an easy goal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, recently with my job, it's become a little harder that I've started to think about lowering that goal to 10 minutes a day just to make it even easier to sit down. But right now I'm in a pretty good place with it. I am writing regularly. I'm working on the third book in this trilogy right now. I don't know if that's what you meant by what's challenging for me in writing.
That's a fair answer.
I think I also struggle a lot when I'm writing. I have a lot of self-doubt about whether or not what I'm writing is any good, and whether or not, or I worry a lot about how what I'm writing is going to be received. And, you know, I read about other authors who don't have that same concern. They're just going to write what they want to write. And I kind of wish I was more naturally like that, where I'm not always thinking of audience.
I think that's typical of many writers, myself included. I don't, you know, I worry about, is what I'm writing any good? You were touching on your routine. Do you have a place that you always write? Is it at home? Do you go to a coffee shop?
Well, I write in a variety of places. Sometimes I'll even write like on my lunch at work. Sometimes I will write at home from bed with a laptop. But usually my big writing sessions usually occur on the weekends, and I typically do that at a particular Starbucks that I go to because I can always get a table there. As a matter of fact, I plan to go there after this interview.
Okay. Is there anything else? Do you have like music you listen to or anything else that kind of helps you, focus on the writing or inspire you to write?
Yes, I do normally listen to music while I write. Some of that, especially when I'm at Starbucks, is really to drown out the music that they're playing. And also, you know, with headphones on, I feel less approachable, so people won't talk to me while I'm there. I know that sounds antisocial, but, you know, I'm trying to work. What I listen to, though, I have to listen to music that I know really, really well, that I've heard a million times, because if I listen to music that I'm not familiar with, I pay more attention to the music than what I'm working on. And so I have certain playlists that I have on Spotify that I normally listen to while I write. And this will sound depressing, but it's generally a playlist of songs that make me feel sad. That's what I write best to. I also listen to some classical music sometimes, too. I listen to Chopin a lot while I write.
Oh, okay. Getting back to Scribbled Victims, it's a vampire novel and a vampire series now. What is it about vampires? What do they mean to you? What is a vampire to you?
Well, to be honest with you, I think writing about vampires was almost incidental to me. What I really wanted to write about were immortals. The concept of immortality really fascinates me. I wish I could be immortal because I don't ever want to die. And, you know, I don't know if you read any of the backstory about the Scribbled Victims, but the character of Orly was inspired by a friend of mine who also passed away from cancer at the age of 19. Aww. And so I created this character largely to basically change the outcome of her illness. They are not similar in the least. You know, Orly, as you've seen, is pretty bratty and headstrong and stuff like that. My friend was quite the opposite, though. But I think that the scenes in the hospital and stuff, they're basically mimicked a lot of my visits to her in the hospital. And, you know, like I said, I just wanted a different outcome for my friend, and that was the inspiration for the book. Well, actually, the book was actually originally a screenplay.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Yeah, I wrote it as a screenplay, but you know, like I was talking before about the constraints of writing a screenplay, you know, I was limited basically to 115 pages of mostly dialogue. And there was just so much more I wanted to do with this story in terms of story development that I couldn't fit it all into a standard screenplay. And so that's what made me decide, even though the screenplay was fully written, I decided I'm just going to scrap that and go back and decide to write it as a novel instead.
Oh, wow. That's I don't know what the word is. That's not something you just do casually. I mean, if you've written anything of any length and just to discard it and start over in a different format, I think that takes a lot of effort.
Yeah, I mean, it's a significant decision to make, but at the same time, you know, there's an advantage to it too, you know, because with a screenplay, you're basically writing a business plan to give to somebody else who will hopefully find the funding to make your film. But, you know, with indie publishing being so easy now and so inexpensive, deciding to write it as a novel also let me know that this will see the light of day much sooner than a screenplay would. You know, it was guaranteed to be published because I knew I was going to do it myself.
Right. I like the way you put it. The screenplay is like a business plan. I never heard it put that way, and I like that.
Well, you're basically using the screenplay to basically say, please give me money.
But instead of taking it to a bank, you take it to a producer or someone.
Correct.
I see.
And I've had meetings with production companies, not over the Scribbled Victims because I never sent it out, but I had some other scripts that got some attention, but the consensus was always that what I was writing was too dark, even though they liked my writing, the subjects were too dark.
I'm fascinated. What is a meeting like that? How does that go? Who's involved? How is that set up? I was just curious, if you don't mind sharing.
Just the producers, they basically talk to you about, well, at least in my experience, they talked briefly about the script that they were interested in, and then they basically wanted to know what else I had available for them to read. And I basically took that as they were going to pass on the original script we came to talk about, and we're just hoping that I had something else. I mean, that's what it felt like. But, you know, they pay for the meal, so it's a free dinner.
Oh, good. So you decided to write it as a novel. Are you someone who plots the novel out from before you start writing it, or do you just write it as you go, like a pantser?
It's kind of in between. I used to outline heavily, like when I was in my teens, but I stopped doing that. Like in 2006, I did a screenwriting program at UCLA, and the methods that they taught us to outline a screenplay, I basically still use while writing fiction now, where, you know, I'm using a three-act structure, and there are certain minutes that you're writing to in a screenplay. So basically what happens is, you know, without getting too involved, I think about those same minutes that if this was a screenplay, what would be happening at this minute, this minute, this minute. And there's basically seven places that I plot down. I actually use note cards on a bulletin board, and I basically plot out those seven specific points on what has to happen at these particular moments in the book. And I put those on usually a colored note card, and I run those across the top of the bulletin board. And then below each colored card, I use white cards to write all the things that have to happen after that point that will bring us to the next colored card. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I could visualize that. That's great.
But the thing is that when I'm actually writing, all that laying out the cards is really just to brainstorm. When I'm actually writing, I generally don't pay attention so much to what's on those white cards. What I do pay attention to, though, is am I reaching the points I plotted out in the colored cards? Because those are like the main plot points that I must reach. And so sometimes while I'm actually writing, I deviate completely from what I had in the other cards, but I still get to the main plot point, so then I feel okay.
Yeah, okay. Are those deviations due like to the character? Maybe the character, you thought the character would do this, but in getting to know the character better, they would do it, the other thing?
Well, without trying to sound too crazy, it's not so much about me thinking that the character would do something else. Like with the character of Orly, like she just does what she wants to do. I often feel like I don't really have complete say in what she does. When I think about where I want the story to go, often I come to points where I just feel that is just not what she would do. She would do this instead. And so I am more guided by her than I am the story I plotted out.
Right. No, that makes sense. Does not sound crazy at all.
Thank you.
Now, when you started writing the first book, did you plot out all three books, or do you plot them out individually?
Oh, definitely not. Because with the Scribbled Victims, I thought it was a standalone book. I thought at the end of the book that I was done. And I know that, you know, the way that the story ends, there is something rather large that is unresolved. But I felt that the character arcs were complete. So I thought, no, this book is done. My characters, you know, they are where they need to be. And that was it. But fortunately, you know, when the book was released, I started getting a lot of comments from readers asking when the sequel was coming out. And I was just like, well, I wasn't planning on having a sequel, but I got that comment so much that I realized, you know, maybe I should do a sequel. And so, you know, I'm really thankful for my readers, because if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't be holding on to this new manuscript right now that's almost done being edited and will hopefully come out by fall. You know, I wouldn't have the second book if it hadn't been for my readers.
Well, that's great. How do you interact with your readers? Are they emailing you, or are you on Facebook? How do you engage your readers?
Well, I mean, some write on Facebook, some write through my website. But oddly, most of my interactions with readers come through Instagram.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which I find really odd, because as an author, you know, as an indie author, you know, you read all these things about building your social media and stuff like that. And I've always found it very hard to build an Instagram as a writer, because, you know, pictures of writing, it's just not very sexy. Right. You know what I mean? Like, right. You can only take so many pictures of your computer screen or, you know, pages with writing on it. Like, who wants to look at that? No, nobody cares about photos like that. So, I mean, it's really odd to me that I've gotten so many contacts through Instagram. It was surprising, because I don't think my Instagram feed is all that appealing.
It's funny you bring that up, because that's how I discover you for myself, is through Instagram. Because I'm all, you know, occasionally, not always, but occasionally I'll do a search for other vampire authors. And I guess you came up at one point. And it was about the time, which is another question I have, is that you made a new cover for your Scribbled Victims book. And I guess that was in, you had put on Instagram the new cover.
Yes. So I had the original cover from the original 2017 release, and I really loved my cover. You know, I really did. I was very happy with it, and I was part of the designing process. I didn't design it, but there were many, many iterations of it. And, you know, my designer and I were going back and forth on it for a long time and produced a version I was really happy with. But as, you know, a year and a half went by, my sales weren't where I wanted them to be, or, you know, the amount of readership I'm getting wasn't where I thought it would be. And some of me suspected, you know, is it possible that this is because my book being a vampire book, it doesn't really look like a vampire book on the cover. You know, I had no person on it. It did not look fantasy at all. You know, it looked more like literary fiction. And so I decided, well, what would happen if I changed the cover? You know, would this get new interest in the book? And so, you know, we did a photo shoot for the cover. And then I went with a different designer this time, because my former designer, she now has 3 children and no time to design. So I had to find a new designer. But I'm happy with the new book, how it came out. I still don't think it necessarily says vampire novel when I look at it, because it's a photograph picture instead of an illustration that you see in a lot of, you know, paranormal and vampire novels. But unfortunately, I can't tell you whether or not, you know, the change has been successful, because I have stopped looking at my book sales and my book reviews. Oh. And so I don't know, actually, if my book sales have gone up. I'm purposely not looking at them, because I just got to a point where I felt looking at them just wasn't mentally healthy for me.
Right, yes. You can't become obsessed with that, and that's not
good. I was obsessed with it. I was checking it every day, if not multiple times a day. And I think the problem was that if there were days where, let's say, I didn't have a book sale or there wasn't a new review, I would feel bad. Mm-hmm. And then when I would get a book review, you know, most of my book reviews, fortunately for me, have been positive. And so, yeah, it feels good to read a positive review, but I never really celebrated those, but I certainly dwelled on the reviews that weren't positive. Oh. And so, you know, being somebody who just kind of naturally focuses on the negative, like, it just wasn't healthy for me to keep looking.
I can understand. I'm glad you were able to quit that then, if it was so negative for you. But at least you got one sale from me because of the new cover, so that, if that's worth anything.
Oh, really? You bought it?
Yeah, I bought the physical book. Yeah. So it's on my shelves. But what was involved with getting a new cover? You had the photo session. You've got some kind of file to use for the cover. But what's involved as far as updating where it's sold? How do you – what's the process? Do you have to – re-upload the whole document as well as the cover, or do you just do the cover, and how do you get it to the print?
Well, I'm publishing through KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, and so that's as simple as just uploading a new file.
Okay.
Provided that the dimensions of the book haven't changed. When we did do the new cover, and like I said, I went with a new designer. I also had to find a new typesetter. So we had to redesign the interior of the book as well, which changed the page count, which slightly changed the dimensions of the cover. So with the Scribbled Victims, I did actually have to re-upload a new PDF for the interior as well as the high-res photo for the cover. But I mean, it's a really easy process.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask you. So it's something you can do like in a day or less?
Oh, easily a day or less. The bulk of the work really comes down to, you know, coming up with the concept for the cover and then going through each iteration that your designer sends you. And I'm fortunate enough to have very committed beta readers that, as each iteration of the cover came out, I kept sending it to my beta readers for their opinions, because I certainly don't trust my opinion. I have no visual eye for anything.
Right, me neither. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, as whereas I'm thinking about a new cover, even though I like the cover I have now.
I've seen your cover. Did you use a designer for that?
Yeah.
You did.
But I appreciate your input on that, your insight on that. When you're writing the sequels, that's book two and book three, was there anything that surprised you with the characters? Did they go in directions you didn't anticipate without giving too much away?
One of the characters who was a main character in the second book, to my delight, became much more developed than I thought she would. So that was a very good feeling because I've been told by my beta readers that the character is now much more complex than she was in the first book.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about Orly, but since you've read the book, you could probably guess who I'm talking about.
Uh-huh. Right. Let's not give away. But it was good. I look forward to reading the others. That's great. So the second one's coming out soon, or is it already out?
No, the second one, like, I actually have it on my desk right now, the edited version, and I have to go through all the edits and then accept what edits I want and, you know, make changes, and then it'll go through another editing cycle, and if I feel good after that, then it'll actually go into audiobook production before typesetting.
Oh, okay. Great. Before I forget to ask, are you comfortable telling who your designer for the new cover is? Is it a company or is it an individual who just happens to?
It's an individual, and you know, her name is Nathalia Suellen, Suellen, and I actually found her on, you know, I belong to a lot of like indie author, like newsletters and stuff like that. And I forget which newsletter came out with a list of great cover designers, but there were like 10 listed. And I looked through their work and contacted this person thinking that she would be a good fit for what I was looking to do. And fortunately, it all worked out. And then after she designed the cover, I actually Googled her and realized there was a Wikipedia page about her and everything. So she was like more famous than I knew.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so I felt really fortunate to get to work with her.
Oh, wonderful. You mentioned newsletter lists for indie authors. Can you name a few that you find valuable?
Oh, I don't know that I can actually do that because I get so many. I do watch all the Kindlepreneur videos.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you watch those yourself, but I find those interesting. However, I also find the whole marketing, you know, the AMS, Amazon Marketing Services, to be so much work. And it's something you really have to keep on top of that I actually am paying somebody to do that for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, I mean, maybe it's – I think for a lot of authors, like, you know, they want to do it yourself a lot. And it's more economical, obviously, if you do it yourself. But the thing is, I just found the whole process of – generating thousands of keywords and like pricing them all to be so much work that, what happened was I read a book on AMS marketing. And as I just read the book, I was just getting more and more overwhelmed with how much there was to know. And then at the very end of the book, you know, there was this section that said, you know, if you want to outsource this, here's some people you could contact. And I was thinking, I wish they would have just put that at the front of the book because that's what I would have done. And so, yeah, I'm kind of lazy about it. But the thing is, like, even though marketing is so important and I know it's gotten me more readers, it's also something that I don't want to focus on. I want to write more books.
Right.
And, you know, that's something else I should mention. When you asked about, you know, struggles that I have as an author, I think one of the biggest struggles also is that I am a slow writer.
Me too, yeah.
And, you know, the Scribbled Victims, to get to, you know, a full draft took me 24 months. And I don't know if that's good or bad. It was 82,000 words. And then the sequel, Scribbling the Eternal, is 125,000 words, but it took me 26 months. And so, you know, that's what it is. But I belong to some Facebook author groups for indie authors as well. And, you know, I see posts where people are posting that, you know, my book is coming out this month and 2 months later, the sequel is coming out. And I'm just thinking, like, how are these people writing so fast? I don't know if it's because, you know, they have the luxury of not having a day job like I do, or they just write amazingly fast. But it's like, I'm just so envious of them because, you know, there's also that Facebook group called, what is it called? 20 to 50K.
Yes.
Yeah. So their philosophy is that, you know, you have to have this catalog of 20 books to get to the point where that will make you earn $50,000 a year in sales.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
But the thing is, yeah, so it's all about volume.
Right.
But I mean, with that group, that's their philosophy. But the thing is, at the rate that I write, I'm never going to reach 20 books. I'll be dead.
Oh my goodness.
You know, so I don't know. I'm really hoping that this third book that I'm working on, I'm going to try my hardest to write it within a year.
Okay.
But
Good luck.
I don't know if I can accomplish that, but that's my goal.
Yeah, I am a slow writer and a reader, which is equally frustrating for me. I wish I could just cruise through books I read and knock them out, because there's so many books I want to read.
I feel that way too. I mean, I'm actually ahead this year on my Goodreads reading challenge, but there's just so many books that I want to read. It's endless.
Yes. You mentioned audiobook. I wasn't aware that you had an audiobook. What was that process like?
That process was really interesting. I went through ACX, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but that's like, I believe, a subsidiary of Amazon that produces audiobooks. It connects authors with what they call producers, meaning the narrators of the books. And it's a whole platform where you can post your book and, you know, description and stuff like that, word count, and people will audition for your to be the narrator of your book. And they have different, you know, structures. There's a split royalty structure where, you know, you're not paying the narrator anything, but you agree to split the royalties 50-50.
Oh, wow.
And then there's a version that's called, I forget, it's kind of like a royalty share, but there's a small fee that goes to the narrator, usually to cover production costs. And then there's the full version where you just flat out pay the narrator per recorded hour. And that's obviously the most lucrative version usually for narrators, because it's a guaranteed amount that they're going to make. You know, when they go into a royalty share, they're really counting on the success of the book and it's selling enough to make it worth their while. And so I considered all that, you know, when I decided to create an audiobook. I mean, obviously, economically, it would have been best to do the right share, but I also felt that I would get the more professional narrators auditioning for me if I went the full paid route.
Oh, that's a good and point. Yeah.
That's ultimately what I did. And so I posted that, and I had, within a couple of days, I had like 26 narrators audition for it. And then I just closed the auditions because there was just enough narrators. And I went through them, and I also sent all the narrations to my beta readers, and we narrowed it down and selected somebody. And I selected my narrator largely based on the tone she was able to set. You know, I wanted a certain tone for my book, and I think she captured it well.
Oh, good.
And she's going to be doing the narration for the sequel as well.
Oh, wonderful. And then what's involved with distributing an audiobook? How do you get it out to readers or listeners in this case?
Well, the ACX platform immediately pushes your book once it's done. It puts it on the audible.com website.
Okay.
So there's visibility there. And so once it's on Audible, it also appears on the Amazon page. So that's good. But I also recently discovered a service called Audiobook Boom. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No, I've not.
But what it is it's a site. Audiobook Boom has followers who sign up for their newsletter based on what genre of books they like. And so they have collected, I don't know how many thousands of audiobook listeners based on particular genres. And then as an author, you can submit your book to Audiobook Boom for only $12. And what happens is if your book is selected, they will send – they will include your book in their newsletter. And then once that happens, the people who receive the newsletter will start contacting you, asking you for a free download in exchange for a review. And so in that sense, you know, you can quickly get, you know, a lot of reviews on your book, which will hopefully lead to, you know, more listeners.
Oh, great. I've not heard of that. I'm glad you told me about it.
Are you planning an audiobook for your book?
I would like that. And I thought that if I do a new cover, that would be a way to test the new cover as well. Like if I, you know, make something just for the audiobook and see how that goes.
Ooh, why do you want a new cover? I like your cover.
Well, I don't know. Like, I'm in the position like you were, where I don't know if the sales are due would be, you know, better with a different cover. I like the cover. I think it's great. But I don't know if that's the reason why it's not at the level, like you were not satisfied with the level you had.
If you change covers, will you use your same designer?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh, okay.
I like working with them. So. I'll finish up with a few more questions. When you read other people's work, do you read as a reader or do you read as a writer, if you understand my meaning?
I do understand your meaning, and I think that's a really good question. I enjoy reading so much, and I always have. And I think I would like to think I read as a reader, but I notice that while I'm reading, I am reading as a writer. I'm constantly looking beyond just enjoyment and trying to see what the writer is doing, and I flag a lot of places in the books that I read, you know, and for things that I find particularly well written. And often while I'm reading, I am learning from the authors I read. And I try to see what I can glean from what I'm reading into ways to try to improve my own writing.
Oh, that's great. So do you like highlight or you put like a sticky or something in the book to mark where?
Yeah, I use those sticky flags. Mm-hmm. And so I can always tell like a book that I really enjoyed because it's full of flags. I used to write in the books all the time, but then I could never find the passages because you'd have to flip through every single page. So that's why I changed to flags.
Well, great. Well, thank you. How can people find you online? How can they support you? How can they contact you if they have questions?
My website has links to all my social media. It has links to all my books that will take them to the Amazon sales pages. It has a blog. They can sign up for my newsletter. And...
Oh, I'll have to do that.
I think that's basically what my blog has to offer. I try to blog every week to just talk about where I'm at with what I'm writing and stuff. And I will actually be posting a blog today about the fact that I just did my first podcast interview. But my website is my last name. It's tomoguchi.com, TOMOGUCHI.com.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm honored that I'm your first podcast.
I'm very flattered that you asked me, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I'll keep in touch, and I look forward to reading more of your work.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. Take care.
You too.